but he failed to use clapperboards during the recording. And the result was that the sound couldn't be synchronized with the video. Pollock actually hired lip readers, trying to piece the film and the sound back together, but eventually he gave up. But in 2008, the project was resurrected. Advances in digital editing and the persistence of the producer, Alan Elliott, brought it back to life. It took Elliott 10 years of legal and technical battles for this gorgeous film, Amazing Grace, to make its debut. I watched the film in a packed house on the final night of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival. And it was partway through that I noticed something. Miss Franklin hardly spoke throughout the concert. Others around her did, the choir director, James Cleveland, her father, who was invited to the stage to offer a word. But Miss Franklin had no words to say, because her words were already there. What she wanted to communicate that night was spoken in the gospel songs. No other explanation was necessary, because no words could convey what she was there to give that night. The music spoke for itself. This is music rooted in the tradition of the Black church, music that Miss Franklin sang in the choir of her father's church as a child, Sunday after Sunday in the waning years of Jim Crow. It was music that kept people alive. It kept hope alive when everything seemed lost. It was music that spoke for a people of the past who had overcome and were overcoming and would continue to overcome in the future, because God was with them. Because God shows up in history on the side of people who are pushed aside and pushed out and pushed down. And on those two nights in January of 1971, the music of Aretha Franklin told the story of God's persistent love, generation to generation to generation. In an interview about the album, the poet Nikki Giovanni, a friend of Miss Franklin, said, "She's going to be the person to reach generations. She's going back to my mother and my grandmother, and she's also going forward. Backwards and forward. That's where Miss Franklin's music takes us, reminding us that faith, that transformation, that resilience comes from somewhere. Somewhere. It comes from a place. From a history. It's embedded in histories and bodies and stories. And when we sing these songs, when we put ourselves into the work of justice, we're linking ourselves up with that history. We're grafting our lives into the work of the Spirit." There were a lot of singers in the 1960s who followed Aretha Franklin's path. They too started off in church music in Black Baptist choirs. Some, like James Cleveland, made careers out of popularizing gospel music for the masses in concert halls and on best-selling albums. Others, like the Staple Singers, they updated and reworked hymns. And Sam Cooke went back and forth between music inside and outside the church. But Amazing Grace was different. It's an album that consciously presents the roots of gospel music. It's even recorded in a church. It's accompanied by an active working church choir, not professional singers. Aaron Cohen, who wrote a book about this album, wrote that few artists at the time emphasized an older generation style and songs on an album the way that Miss Franklin did. Rooted in a story, rooted in real lives, rooted in history. We know that all creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who were the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies. That seems right to me. That feels like an accurate description of our world, of my life, what I see around me every day. But Paul goes on. For in hope we are saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it in patience. For in hope we are saved. It's a little bit harder to make sense of that. It would seem like in justice or rightness we are saved. We are saved by not having terrible politicians, or saved by people learning to be generous with their stuff. We're saved by empathy or by political organizing, by meditation or reaching across the aisle. But no, in hope, we are saved. I can see how that might seem at best silly, and at worst, naive or even cruel. And that's exactly what it is if we think of hope as this temporary outworking of making the world right. But what if hope isn't like that? What if hope is a resilience, a way of life embedded in time, embedded in a people, embedded in a history that is unfolding and retracting, moving its way onward? What if something is hope is something we can trace backwards and forwards, not in political music, but in songs? What if it's something you can put your finger on, a pulse that's generating, one that we can feel beneath the surface? That's the hope of creation, the groaning of the spirit. And in that groaning, we hear the story of hope about to be born in us. And I think why I get drawn back to this album by Aretha Franklin over and over is because I hear that's what she's offering me here. She's pointing us back towards this pulse of hope that beats through a people who have overcome and are continuing to overcome. She is putting herself into the grain of hope. It was this understanding of music, of what it could convey, that made Miss Franklin's voice so powerful. Those groans so deep, they sound to me like what the Holy Spirit must sound like. Miss Franklin emerged from the church, from a faith people put in God who was with them. They believed that God had set the line of hope through them, through the Black church, and this found its way into the rest of her music, even when it fell outside of traditional church music. When she was just 24 years old, Miss Franklin sat down at the piano to rework a song by Otis Redding, and she made it her own. The song, Respect, became an anthem of the 1960s. It was called a revolutionary demand for both women's freedom and Black freedom. Respect became a sort of sleeper hit of the civil rights movement, right alongside Nina Simone's Mississippi Goddamn and Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come. It was a song that proclaimed that the personal is political and the political is always personal. And beating in the background of Respect is all that came before Miss Franklin that led her to write that song that day. In that song and all the songs to come, songs about joy and life to the fullest, songs about power and strength, in the background is this line of hope passed down through a people who believed that God was for them. God was for a people stolen from their lands, sold into slavery, rescued by God, working through this people's own strength and resilience. And it continues to work out in people who demand God's justice. I sense God's salvation in that kind of hope. We've been talking about hope a lot the past 3 weeks. Hope in God with us, the God whose back is against the wall alongside the oppressed. We talked about hope springing up in the unexpected joy of work, when we've heard songs of freedom that put us into the pulse of God's work in people within time. But I wonder, where have you seen hope? Where has hope welled up in your life? When was the last time that hope was real for you? Brenda came around with a piece of paper, and I'd like you to think about that question and maybe write something down. When was the last time that you felt hope? And as we listen to another song, I'll ask you to fill those out. And I'll collect them again and read them when we're done. Because in hope, we are saved.
And I'm really sorry I didn't have quite enough slips to give everybody. I was expecting a